Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to another CT Just Tennis Talk Show Radio. I'm your host, Coach Wes Fuller, along with my co-host, Susan Nardi. Hey, Susan, how you doing today?
Doing awesome in the rainy Houston weather. Hopefully you got some better weather today, dude.
We did. It was actually forecast to be rain. We had rain all week, and we looked at the forecast all week. If you looked at it Sunday, it was rain every day this week. Monday turned out to be pretty good because I've learned something about the weather people. You know, these weather people are slick. You know, it's where you're at. Seriously, Susan. It rained in the north and in Atlanta, but see, I'm a little bit south of Atlanta, so it didn't rain. Like, even when they talk to snow, you know, my wife may be like, oh, we got to go get this, we got to go there. They're talking about the north of Atlanta, just that little bit of distance where we got rain. And, you know, I was talking to some of my friends, and it was raining up there, and I'm like, I'm on the court. And they're like, well, how are you on the court? You're only 30 miles, I mean, 23. Listen, I'm on the court. It's sunny here. So, it turned out to be a good day. I actually felt good even about my players. I got two young kids that are 9 years old playing in their first 12 and under tournament, Green Dot, this weekend at level four. And they're excited, and I'm excited for them. And kids are working hard. The weather breaks, getting into the news. It was a good day. It was a good day, you know. And yours?
Yeah, you know, it actually was overcast. It was warm. It was 76, 78 degrees. And then I got on the court, and I'm serious, about 15 minutes later, skies opened up, it rained, and then we did conditioning. But we just had our Future Stars tournament a week ago, and I had about a third of the kids in the tournament. I think I took about 24 kids from our academy over to the tournament, and we did really well. We had, I think, of the 24 kids, I think 18 won some sort of medal, whether it was first, second, or sportsmanship. So we had a pretty strong showing. So we were pretty close.
Good. Well, you know what I watched today. I was sitting here about an hour ago, watching, like, what am I going to do? How am I going to make Susan laugh this week? You know, Susan, how am I going to make her laugh? And then it came on television. I was watching Kim Clijsters playing Lindsay Davenport. And I was just imagining, me, I put myself in a situation, so don't try to run nowhere with it. I was Kim Clijsters, and you was Lindsay Davenport. And, everybody was talking all this junk, and Lindsay Davenport was supposed to beat Kim Clijsters because, she was up by a couple points. Kim pulled it out, you know. I was just thinking about the glory it would be, you know, of me just beating up on you in the court. You know, I just was imagining it. I was imagining you're a female, you know, why shouldn't I beat a female? I'm just saying, Susan, why would I ever have to worry about beating a female? That's a question, actually, on a serious note, that I actually find to be interesting, a concept that men have. And when I say that, it's to say that, in all honesty, I'm Susan, if I was to play you, I probably would be a very close match. And just because I'm a male and I could overpower you, there's more to tennis than the physical aspect, the physical abilities of tennis. There's a pressure thing. There's something that it doesn't give a darn what gender you are. It is there, and it can make a big, strong guy like me wither, just come down, wither. And one of the things I wanted to talk about, which is going to be, most people, well, everybody knows, Susan didn't know that I was going to have her do this a little bit, because this is our Female Coach Week, and our guest that we had some arrangements, some things where we had to reschedule it. So I wanted to do a show on someone that. I wanted to do a show and just highlight Susan. I wanted to highlight what I thought was the – I wanted Susan to talk about what she perceives as Susan as an athlete. Susan, if Susan was a tennis player, what she perceives females or what she perceives tennis in general, what made her – her be a strong mind, what made her be a coach that can get kids within 5 to 10 minutes hitting a, rallying a ball, or what makes her being able to relate to kids. And because I've seen men that they think that they can do certain things, and I've seen you do the same exact things, and I've seen men go under pressure and lose to ladies, and I've seen you go under pressure and win. So I want to know about you. What makes you believe, Susan, that not just that, what makes you believe that you could beat me? What makes you believe, Susan, that if a guy wanted to challenge you that was a pretty good guy, that you would beat them? Do you look at it as a gender thing? Do you look at the man as being a man, or do you just look at it as a tennis player?
It's funny, because before I got injured, I would have, you know, all things being equal, I mean, a man, depending on the size of the guy, is probably going to physically be stronger than me, although, you know, I used to work out with bodybuilders in the weight room, so physically I was, my quads are pretty beefy. But, you know, with so much of me, I think it has more to do with my head than it has to do with anything else. That my head was always really, really good, and I had a really good belief factor, and I believed in myself so strongly, and I have just so much confidence in my skill that when I go out there, that if I make a mistake, and you're going to make mistakes when you play, I don't let it bother me, I don't let it rock me, I don't show any emotion like that. I just, you know, I focus on the task, and I'm very single-minded that way. So, you know, that and I have incredible aim.
But when you lose a point, you know, you came out, you know, we're playing, you come out, and I hit an ace on you. Is that going to, as you as a female, and I'm only trying to put myself into a way or a perspective of sometimes men, or we perceive things, because I'm big and I hit an ace on you, as soon as I hit this ace on you, are you going to crumble? I'm just saying, are you going to... Is it going to make you not make me have to play to beat you?
Oh, I'm going to make you play. I mean, you're going to get your aces. You're going to get your stuff. But, you know, I think I'm going to get my freebie points too. And it's going to be differently in how I get my freebie points. I'm really good with applying pressure to people. But, you know, it's one of those things. Even like when the guys and I at work are horsing around, we'll do stupid things. And we're like shooting balls at the cart, trying to get the balls at the cart. None of them play me anymore because I always win. And I'm notorious for putting, you know, shooting the ball, doesn't matter where I am, and within 3 shots getting it in. And then I have such feel that it's like crazy. It's almost like playing darts. Once I get in a feel zone and I'm in a rhythm, it's over with, and I can do it at will. But you know, that's because that's how I was trained as a kid with my brother-in-law. We used to throw knives. He taught me how to throw knives and how to shoot and all that kind of stuff when I was a kid. So I'm pretty calm and when it comes to all that sort of stuff. So yeah,
so
I just don't look at it as a gender thing because I was never treated that way growing up. So I just don't look at it that way. And most of the time where I grew up, it was the female athletes that were the stronger athletes. I mean, every year at my high school, it was a female team that won state. A male team never won state. Never. And it was always, I grew up in a neighborhood where I had, the girls that I grew up with, there's 4 of us that do triathlons. I mean, it's, you know, you talk about small, you know, well, Charlottesville not being a super small town, wah-hoo-wah, but, you know, that there's 4 of us that do triathlon, that's pretty huge. You know, it just tells you how much uber jocks we were. It was competitive, to say the least.
So do you think that, do you think that, I mean, because I've seen conversations, I've started conversations with myself, and I tend to think maybe it's my experiences or maybe it has something to do with sports or different sports, where, I mean, it's this question may sound stupid when you start really saying, when I make a statement of Serena beating an ATP player, and Susan, I'm going to ask you this because I'm going to ask you, not because I'm going to ask you because I know you as an athlete. I know you as a winner. I know you as a competitor. I know you. So by taking I know you, which I would say you would probably be a close to a Serena, I can understand Serena not beating maybe a top 100. And maybe she might, but I can understand maybe. But if you start saying Serena couldn't beat a player that's in the top 300s, the top 100 of a that are ATP, I find it. I'm just going to be honest with you. I find that hard that men can believe that, because I remember when I was coming up, there was a young lady called Cheryl Miller. Everybody,
yeah.
Cheryl Miller.
Yeah,
Cheryl Miller. Yes, Cheryl Miller was bad. Cheryl Miller may not have been able to beat Magic. Cheryl Miller could play on any guy's team and would beat these guys. She would beat her own brother. She would beat them. Why? She dealt with pressure. I've seen Cheryl, I mean, she was a highlight player. She was a big-time player she dealt with. So now you take a player who's 350 in the World Series and has never played in front of 30,000 people, that who's never played for millions of dollars, who's never had so much exposure in his life. It's not pressure. So if we put that pressure onto a person who's never had it, even though they're physically stronger, I can't necessarily mentally, because mental has nothing to do with gender, but physically stronger and maybe built a little physically different so they can do things, can't that pressure make that person play terrible?
Oh, I think so. I think so. And, I mean, you know, it's one of those things that, I mean, as far as physically, the guy's far more physical than she is. And, I mean, I've seen her hit with her practice partners live in front of me. And so, you know, and I actually know what, actually back in the day when I was running a tournament in Manhattan Beach, I actually spent some time with one of them, but he was a player at Stanford. And he used to beat up on her all the time. But I think it starts to change a little bit if you put it at the U.S. Open and there's a crowd full of people and stuff like that. I think it starts to get a little dicey. I mean, not that the guy still doesn't have an advantage, but when the pressure is on,
that's correct.
I think overwhelmingly it's Serena's favor. Now, physically,
that's right.
Can he hit the ball harder? Can he serve harder? Can he do all this stuff? Yes, 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 yes. Is he faster running? Yes. Is he doing this? You know, can he hit the ground strikes probably harder? Yes, although I've seen him really crack some ground strikes before. And it sounded like a cannon shot. But, you know, when you're dealing with that kind of pressure, and I mean I know what you're talking about. I've seen some of these big Uber girls do some amazing stuff, and you just stand there and you go, So I think it's kind of interesting.
And my relationship, my thing to that is getting into the concept of or the relationship or the opinion. I mean, I'm trying to bring it all into a circle here in a sense, because we have two guests on today that both are in two different spectrums of tennis. One of them, you know, they both are involved in tennis, and I want to bring them in after we have a short. I just want to hear a little short discussion where the perception of all I've seen, all overwhelmingly men. No one ever stopping to look at the mental game of tennis, the mental part of it. They're only looking at the gender part of it, exactly what you said, the pressure. Does that go into the respect that male coaches give female coaches? Because I'm just gonna look at myself from the outside. If I say I have a post, or if I'm not a post, if I have I'm doing a survey. And out of all these surveys, 99.9% of men out of 1,000 say that Serena couldn't beat. Some of you said Serena couldn't even beat a D1 man, a player. Now, but she's number one in the world, and she's if you feel that way about that, is there somehow a subliminal way, is there some kind of message that is that the way they actually treat female coaches also? Because is there a relationship to that? I mean, if I'm making any sense.
You know, and it's interesting that you say that because, you know, and I don't think it's me. I don't put limitations on my players because actually in our academy right now, the best player is a girl, clearly a girl. So, you know, actually the best three players. It's not saying anything bad about the guys at all. It's not. It's just that girls are, you know, they're higher ranked. They're, you know, they've just got more going on now. We do have a young kid who just turned 13, who's coming up pretty strong. But you know, the three girls, all three of them would beat up on him. So I don't know. I think there's, you know, when it comes to that kind of stuff, I think some of the guys have a harder time with playing those girls because they think because they're girls that they should beat up on them, and that's not necessarily, you know, how it works. You know, on my, you know, 9-to-5 job.
But no, you know, not even that, Susan. I'm looking at relationship of that to the relationship of male coaches and female coaches. I mean, If I can sit and say that I am so much better than you in a sport, you couldn't beat a high school player or a D2 player, then now, to me, there has to be something that transcends from that mindset to a coach now. Now the male coach, does he now also think as a coach that he is that much more superior? See, because for me to think that you've got a player who's number one in the world, as a female, she's not, she's number one in the world, and she's not a small person at all. Where I hear everybody talks about a serve, Serena hits a serve faster than some of the guys, but you're saying she couldn't beat the top, a D1 recruit or top this. Okay, if that's true, and if you believe that, I have to believe that there could be, is there some relationship into that, into your perception of female coaches?
You know,
if you make any sense.
For men, that's an interesting question. I think she can be, I don't have any doubt that she can't be D1 players. I mean, she might lose to one or two just because of randomly you lose to one or two players. But no, I think she's fine on that. But it's interesting because I can tell you career wise, I've always felt I've had to be more certified, more qualified, study harder, know more to be equal at the table, and then I had to almost like withdraw a little bit of what I knew because all of a sudden if they realized that I knew as much, then I felt like all of a sudden I was a threat, and that has happened a lot to me, personally. But, you know, it's interesting.
Do you feel that sometimes that you have to be, now I'm not going to say ignorant, but have to be ignorant or have to insult or have to let it put a man in his place in order for them to respect you when you rather not do that, but they pushed it that far or they tend to ignore you that far, or in order for you to be heard or respected, you had to make them respect you, where in a sense where everybody should be respected. I mean, it's a fantasy world to think everybody should be respected, but you know, if you know a coach is a coach, and if you know they're a good qualified coach, then they should be respected. Do you feel as though you have to, because you're a female, and because to me, and I'm going to say this because I'm looking at it from a tennis coach's point of view and from another sports point of view, that we have this great that dream that we are so superior, do you feel as though you have to be arrogant to get your point across? I mean, can a soft-spoken, mild-mannered female coach really survive in this world? Seriously.
Soft-spoken and mild-mannered usually doesn't go with me until you see me on the court and I'm have my, you know, and I'm very zen. It's just when I'm off the court, you know, that I'm not so zen. But, I started off as being a high-performance person. And I was told, oh, you're a girl. Everybody will want to hire you, you know. I'm like, oh, great. And then what happened was I had clubs that wanted to hire me, but they didn't want to hire me for high performance because, oh, well, we're the guys. You know, we're better players. We're stronger players. We'll take care of that. We want to stick you down here with the kids. And they gave me the end of the programming, which now we would call it, you know, Raj. Back then we didn't have a name for it. But that's where they stuck me because they didn't want to deal with it because they felt it was beneath them, and we'll let you do that. Well, what happened is, I used to joke with my husband that I screwed up in reverse, is that I got really good at understanding the beginning stages and looking at what skill sets athletically and tactically and stroke-wise that I needed to develop and kind of creating an order of it, and got really good at it and started producing players. And all of a sudden, I had people that's like, oh, well, now we want to do that. And so you're gone and you're out of here. And I'm like, huh? You know, I thought I was doing my job and creating a flow of players and creating players and going up the chain. It wasn't I was trying to keep them. I was just trying to send them up the chain and get more players in the program and develop it. And then I had people that would all of a sudden go, you know, now I wanted it. Well, wait a minute. You brought me in because you didn't want to do this. Now I've done all this. I've grown the program. I've created these players that are moving up, and now you want to do it. It's like throwing my hands up. So
now,
I got
now,
good enough
you,
for this, and then I got good enough for that, then I got too good.
I don't want you to name any. I know you, okay? So I'm telling you now, don't you slip and name anything. Don't you name me.
I promise.
Okay. Do you think that it was because you were a female?
Yes,
I'm just saying. Do you think that it was? Now, are there other? And I'm not. And this, please, I want people to understand. I'm not saying that, coach. Sometimes, and I'm going to say it as a man, and I'm going to admit, sometimes we as men do something, or we have this feeling that we are the top of the chain or of the alpha male and the alpha, and we sometimes do things or we react or we do things that we really don't really mean it that way. It's just our alpha man. It's our alpha man in us, and I think that's the way nature and everything has given us. But your situation is not about being an alpha male. See, there's a difference by being an alpha male. Okay, I want to dominate. I want to do something, but I want to do it, or I want to outdo you. Versus, okay, now you've done the work. Now I want to take it. See, that's a difference to me than an alpha male going against the alpha male.
I usually don't have a problem with alpha. I mean, if, you know, I'm thinking back at my one of my coaches growing up that's actually on our forum, that I was one of, he wasn't my primary coach, but he was one of my coaches, and if he hears this, he's going to die laughing. But I've never met any person more alpha than my mother in my entire life. And I think when you grow up, and it's not that my dad didn't have a personality, and he was Mr. Renaissance man. It's like having Leonardo da Vinci as a father, but my mother was alpha, and my mother was in charge of any time she entered the room. There was no doubt he was in charge. And I think growing up in that environment, I don't have a problem with that because, you know, and that's my reputation is off the court a little bit, is that I tend to be extraordinarily alpha. I've mellowed a bit. I really have, but I used to be really bad. And my friends in Southern California who knew me back in the day, if they hear all this, they can definitely call in and tell some great stories. But it's more the underhanded. It's almost like they're, for me, they almost do it like a female kind of thing where they're passive-aggressive with me. I'm just like looking at them like, really? And the slightness of things. And that's how I got into the stuff, was the way for me to make a living and to make money, because we needed the extra income in my household, was to get really good at that.
I want to spend a little two more minutes, and I want to go into our next segment. Something that I mentioned to a couple coaches before, well, two things. One thing, Susan, I wanted to get your opinion on, and this has nothing to do with you. This, if I'm 32, 34, I'm a very attractive young lady, very well built. I want to be a professional tennis coach. I have, you know, I'm pretty. I'm just being honest. I was maybe a model. I can play tennis, and I'm a beast. But I'm pretty. I like fine things. I have my nails. I'm immaculate with my nails. I am a girly girl, but I'm a beast. Do you have, I don't know if you've had friends that way, but if you can maybe kind of imagine, well, I'm sure you can, would they find it hard to break into our industry?
Boy, if you don't have any playing, if you don't have some sort of playing experience or background.
She's got some background. She played at a D1 college tennis. I played at the D1 college. I actually went on tour and, you know, I played some ITS. Well, I just got tired of it. But see, while I was playing tennis.
I'm just envisioning you in the skirt. That's just cracking me up right now. I'm just envisioning you in a skirt.
Well, you know, one time, I'll tell you a story. My junior year, I was dating a young lady, and we were going to Halloween costume, Susan. Don't let me forget what I was on, but we were going to Halloween costume, and I was a cheerleader, and she was a basketball player. They told me that I could win $500. I became a cheerleader. I got up there and performed, and I told the girl, I was like, give me a makeup. I went in the bathroom, put the makeup on. I worked my work. And everybody laughed at me. Listen, I walked in with the $500. Listen, I didn't care about nothing. Everybody was cracking up. And you know, I walked home with the money. Hey, you know, I'm about it. But to get back on that question, the reason I say that is that, you know, there's lots of times I've seen players, even pro players, where if you look at the pro player on the court, you're like, well, dang, she's not that attractive. But then when you see her off the court, you would be like, whoa, drop dead. I mean, gorgeous. But now when she now goes from that tennis, where you might not have known her as the glamour girl, you know, the Jeannie Bizarre. She wasn't that. She was, you know, you just didn't know. But now she now says, I want to coach. Now, but she's now herself. You know, she's a wife. She wants to look good and look like a woman. Now she wants to break into our industry. Would she have a problem?
Well, if you've got a name, that helps. If you've got a name that you have that helps.
Well, not even a name.
If you play D1 or you play D2 or D3 and you don't have a name where you have some name recognition, it's harder and where you get subjected.
But why would she need a name when there are hundreds, if not hundreds of thousands of coaches male coaches that have never hit a tennis ball until they were 26, 27, can get a certification and say they're tennis coaches. Well, this girl has experience.
It's the nature of the
industry. Is that our industry? I'm just saying,
Look at it this way.
Anybody that listens to this show, that's wrong. I'm just letting anybody, that's wrong. Anybody that's listening to this show,
That is wrong. If she, if that, if a coach, a female coach, if, especially I'm really looking at the female coach, are judged by their looks, are judged by certain things, and not judged equally or by the merits of what they can do, that's wrong. That's wrong. That's wrong.
I agree. And, you know, I have known, I mean, I probably know maybe personally that I can think of maybe a dozen women that are tennis directors in this entire country. A dozen. Now, there might be, I'm sure there's got to be a few more out there that I don't know of. Maybe they're really under the radar, but I can only think of a dozen. And when I, and that's pretty sad when you think of it. That's just, that's sad. And is it that people don't think women can manage it? All the women that I know that are in the position have all strong playing backgrounds, and they are they have played on the circuit at some point in time in their life.
Well, we're almost wrapping this up. We've got one more thing, Susan, and to finish with this segment of what I'm saying, to lead it all up to it, is I asked a question one time when I do understand what pumps can do to people's feet. But I asked a question that to me is a very interesting question. People and a lot of men, a lot of things, they laughed and joked around it, and even some women didn't understand what I was trying to say when I asked, could a woman or lady or woman come to a tennis match, a professional tennis match, dressed in pumps, a nice business suit? Would she get respected? And I'm not saying that women have to do that. I'm not saying they should, but that's prerogative because they're women. A woman could come in pumps. If I came in pumps, something wrong. But a woman comes in pumps, that's, I mean, to me, to see a woman walking in some pumps and some heel and suit, in every day, that's everyday life. But now, could a woman coach come to a tennis match dressed like, I'm just going to say, look at female basketball coaches in college. They're dressed. They're suit and they, I mean,
yeah,
they dress down. Could a woman coach, and that's not to say that, Susan, you have to, but I'm saying, could a woman coach come with heels on and be with makeup on and she's smelling all good with her, you know, her Louis Vuitton, she's got a Louis Vuitton, you know, she looking good like a woman. Could she come in? Would she be accepted? I mean, would she be respected? I mean, I know it's a hypothetical.
I don't think it would
think?
Change.
I mean,
I don't think it would change a thing. And I mean, I know. I mean, I sit back here, and I mean, Maresmo with Murray, and I know she was sitting in the stands in jeans and a T-shirt or something like that.
I didn't want to put it on. It was. It was unfair for me to pick on her because you should be able to come in any way you want.
I brought it up, so it's okay.
I don't want y'all to pick. Say I picked.
No.
I agree. She has the freedom to come the way she wants.
I'll take the heat in the form if anybody says anything. And I don't think it matters what she wears or what she doesn't wear. I mean, she wasn't hired for her looks, or she wasn't hired for anything. I mean, Murray made the choice because he felt that was the right person.
But no, not even that. No, Susan,
But
not even that.
Get more respected from the men coaches.
Yeah, but when she walks,
I don't think it matters.
When she walks into the players' lounge, when she walks into where all the men coaches are, where they all are. They dress even, you know, they dress down. She walks in there looking like a lady. She walks in there with a suit on, a nice suit that, you know, she might even show some legs. She walks in there with a nice suit on. She might even show a little bit of cleavage. I'm just being real. A woman is a woman. I mean, let's be real. I'm a man.
Well,
I mean,
I walked in. This is a funny story. I walked in somewhere at a tournament, and my very best friend was with me. He was like a sister to me. And she used to be a four-runway model. And was an executive at a movie theater at one time in her life, and comes walking in, $1 million legs. Her legs have actually been on movie posters when she was working at Fairmont years ago. And they actually traded her legs and put her, photoshopped her legs on my best friend's legs instead of having Demi's more legs for this one movie poster. And, I mean, I mean, did the guys turn around and look at her? Yeah, sure they did. I mean, she's not a coach or anything, but what were they thinking? It was pretty obvious what they were thinking. But she has nothing to do with the tournament or had nothing to do with what's going on. She just came by to see me to give me some news, and we were just walking by. But is it going to
get... But now, she'd have been a coach when she'd been respected.
No, I don't think
she'd have been a coach. If she'd been a coach and she walked up to another coach and said, "Hi, I'm this guy, this girl's coach, you know, let's do some high-performance thing." I'm just really honest and honest.
No, I think what it does is you know, anytime I've seen her go into situations, even meetings, and I mean, I've been in tons of meetings with her, and she's dressed to the hilt and looks as beautiful as she does. I think sometimes the men get more distracted by her looks and then get intoxicated with her personality and forget that she's probably one of the more intelligent people that I know. So, she's my walking dictionary. I still call her on the phone to this day and ask her how to spell certain things, and I can't even get close with spell check.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm just saying, I don't think that matters. I think men look at women how they want to look because they're wired that way a little bit. And I think that needs to change. And
that's been great. This has been great. Now we got to wrap this up. I want everybody to know. Now Susan's got to switch hats again. Now Susan has to go get her hat back on to being my co-host. But one thing I wanted to leave Susan with, everybody, y'all just heard Susan say that, you know, it doesn't matter. You should do that. You know, the coach looked at. Listen, I want everybody to know that Patrick Rafter was coaching somehow, he could beat Susan. If Patrick Rafter walked in, he was coaching somehow, somewhere, he could beat Susan. Susan, am I wrong or right? Susan?
Well, all I can say is this. When Patrick Rafter bumped into me back when, before it was Indian Wells, when it was at its other venue, and he bumped into me when I was holding my son and I fell down, it's the only time in my entire life that I've been speechless. And I couldn't even form a word. And because it's Patrick Rafter doesn't bad, bad, bad. I think that was about all that came out.
We got to move on. Now, everyone, I want to go into a segment which I think is important. You know, we hear about, you know, we all know about Nick Bollettieri. We all know about Dennis Vandermeer. We all know about Lance. We all know about all these high-performance coaches, all these high-name coaches. Well, one thing that I and Susan, and when we sat down and we said we wanted to do a show together, we wanted to do things, we said we wanted to highlight the real, and I'm not going to say those coaches are not real, please. I want nobody telling me, we wanted to highlight some coaches. I mean, some real coaches, some coaches that are really making changes into the lives of kids. You know, everybody knows me as this person that, you know, I play to win. True, I look for kids to get scholarships. I did, but I'm also real to understand that the game is a game for kids that can help them with health. It can help. Sometimes the game of tennis can help a kid with self-esteem. Sometimes it can help them with focusing on in school. It's a lot of different reasons why the game of tennis can help a child instead of going and getting a scholarship. I can sit here and say, sure, I mean, you can. If somebody wants to get me later on a form and say, wow, you said this, yes. That's how I myself believe, but I also am a coach to have kids that I know the child is not going to get a scholarship, but the child is working, the child is making, even the mother is talking about how well she's doing more in school. It's all coming from tennis. And we have two guests today that I'd like to share some of their stories and some of the things that they do in tennis and some of their perspective of tennis. And, you know, we have a guest I don't know much about Coach John. I don't know as much about him, but Juan just gave me some information and that they're even international. You know, I'm very curious to hear about, you know, what they're doing in the Philippines. And even if John may even have a story, because everyone, I haven't heard these stories. We have a group and we have a lot of coaches. And I I highlight these coaches. Well, I don't know their story, but I know what I've read from their comments. I know what I've seen from their comments, their demeanor, their ideas, their concepts, and I like them. And I thought that the world should hear about those things. It's not whether or not they're trying to be the next Nick Bollettieri or they're trying to be this. No, what they're trying to be is quality coaches to quality kids. And I think that's more important than anything in life. You know, I want kids to go to school. I want kids, yeah, but we want to make a difference. And, you know, I do, you know, we are a life sports. And, yeah, I tend to say that, well, the person doesn't recognize the life meanings of sports until it's over. However, if we still change that, he's never going to recognize it. So whether or not he recognizes it as a young age or as an old age, we still have to stay that life sport. So I want to introduce these two coaches. We're going to give them both a little time to give us a little background, a little bio of themselves. And then Susan and I, you know, are going to ask them some questions or, you know, spend a little time talking to them. And you know, hopefully we'll have some fun and hopefully we'll all learn something or be enlightened. Because I think the biggest problem that we as coaches have is not knowing each other, not really knowing each other, not really understanding each other, understanding the struggle that it may be someplace else, understanding that it's the world is not equal. And tennis development, tennis is just not equal, where, you know, we're worried about somebody's footwork. That person may be worried about even having a ball to even hit with, let alone worried about whether or not you hit an open stand or a closed stand. So just hit a ball. It's good. So I'm not going to waste any more time, but I'm going to introduce our first coach. If I get his name wrong, I'm sorry, coach. This is usually Susan. I usually have Susan do the presentation, but since this is female coaches week, so I have to do all the work. I have to do most of this just the female. I have to do all the work. And the coach, Taiwan, say how do you pronounce it?
Tuan, you're close.
Tuan, coach Tuan. So I want everybody to sit back and hear. I want everybody to sit back and hear his story or hear some of the things that he does, which I think are very interesting. It's all yours, coach.
Well, thanks, Wes. I think the leading was just perfect when you said that. You know, I'm not out here trying to create a Bollettieri or whatever. You know, I just did what I thought was best for my daughter at the time, and it spun into this thing that had a life of its own. So I think you know, your leading was interesting. But before I go into myself, I was listening to you and Susan talk, and I actually had a real-life experience this last weekend that had to do with strength versus mental toughness and, you know, which one wins out. Well, my daughter was playing against University of Hawaii, and I'll send you a picture, Wes. You won't believe it. The girl's like 6'1".
Okay.
Big girl, and she, you know, her ITF junior ranking was 22. In the world, and her WTA ranking was 700 as of the end of 2012. So this girl can really play tennis. She's a big, strong girl. My daughter's 5'1". When she shook hands on the net, I mean, I was shocked at the size. So my daughter has no business, you know, playing against this girl. But long story short, they went down to the third set, and as you know, they play no ad now in college tennis. And the score was 4-3. My daughter was leading in the third set. And they had a no-ad point. And they had this long rally. And this girl, who was, you know, a big, tall, strong girl, had about 3 balls she could have attacked and didn't. To my surprise, she backed off, I guess because of the no-ad pressure. They didn't want to attack. The second my daughter had the opportunity to attack, she won the point. So now it's 5-3. They go to another no-ad, deuce point. That's 5-3. Again, another probably 15-20 ball rally, and same story. My daughter ended up hitting the winner, and the other girl had a few chances to attack. So long story short, just to back up your point, you know, strength, talent has a lot to do with, you know, playing good tennis. But if you put heart and courage into the equation, then I think that's the deciding factor.
It plays a big role, and I think that sometimes we as coaches don't look at that. We don't look at heart. I mean, we you know, we're very seldom do I hear people have a conversation about heart. I mean, we always tend to think that, you know, if their foot, or well, that the forearm is down. That's why they lost. Or because the feet was facing, that's why they won. I mean, we don't look at the major reason why someone wins is because they wanted it more than someone else. Well, I'm not going to say the major, but it's a big factor in it. I mean, you know, it's a big factor in wanting it, and the simple fact of, can I want it? Someone can want it more, and they can find a way, and it plays a factor into things, and no matter how big someone is. I mean, I spoke to a person the other day and said he was in the military. I said, I'm sure you know, sir, he was in one of these wars, and I said, I'm sure you know some big guys that when they got to, he said, Wes, I could tell you some stories. These guys, if you saw them in the gym or before, you were like, man, you're going to tear somebody up. Soon as the gun started shooting, they had to go change their pants. Why? Pressure, scared. There's so much more to tennis. I mean, this is when I even tell people that Michael Jordan and these great athletes may not necessarily be great tennis players because pressure, I mean, and discipline. Tennis is – I'm not going to waste the time going there. That's a whole other subject. But go ahead.
Right.
Hear some more about you. More what you do. I'm very interested. I think everybody should hear.
Yeah, that'd be great. But I just want to make sure I point that out because I think that was important. Anyway.
Thank you.
You know – Well, my name is Tuan Nguyen, and pretty much played tennis all my life since I was a little boy. Played college tennis at Cal State LA. Met my wife. She was on the women's team. She won the NCAAs 1990, singles and doubles. Had our kids, and then, you know, I started training my daughter just because we played. So I just decided to train her. And as she got better and better, I realized I need to get professional help. So I started looking around for academies for her to train because she was actually getting quite decent. And to my surprise, the one common thread I found with the – I mean, I went to – okay, I shouldn't be naming names, but I went to three top academies in the U.S. and a couple in Asia. But the common thread I found was they weren't after my daughter. They didn't see the talent. They were after my money. And I realized, I could pay them, but then the return wasn't what I was looking for. So I decided to train her myself. And we're going back to about 1999, 2000. So I started research tennis. And I realized, even though I played most of my life and pretty high level, I didn't know very much about the technical aspect of the game. I didn't know what a proper forehand looks like, proper backhand, whatever, you know, footwork. So, you know, to make a long story short, through wanting to teach my daughter the right way, I started, you know, educating myself on tennis. So got her to a decent level. And since we live in the Philippines, it was pretty difficult for me to find players for her to hit with. So, and then at that point in time, you know, the Philippines, I saw there was a lot of talent there. A lot. Good talent. But they weren't being coached properly, number one. Number two, there weren't money for them to travel out of the Philippines to compete. Because, you know, if you be in the Philippines, you'd be number one there. But you go out and you're nobody. You can't win outside because you haven't seen the levels. You haven't seen the different style. You know, you haven't seen the world. So those were the issues that were keeping these kids from improving. So what I did was I started an academy called Philippine Tennis Academy, PTA. It's still ongoing. And what we did was we got some sponsors. We got like four gentlemen who were tennis aficionados with, you know, lots of money. And they decided to put their money into the academy. And we did that in 2010. We started the academy. And with the sole purpose of getting kids who otherwise would not have a chance to do anything, you know, they were just stuck. You know, they're from very poor families, but you know, they show some tennis talent, but they would be, you know, growing up hitting for money, you know, not very much, and the choice in life would be limited. So I want to give them a different way, a way out, and that's what we did. We took in kids that we thought had, you know, decent talent, had a passion for the game, and had some talent, and we train them for free. We actually even brought the coaches and, well, we hired five coaches for the academy. We brought the coaches and the kids to Southern California to train to begin the training. The coach would learn how to coach, and the kids would get, you know, competition, Southern California and national tournaments. So we did all that, and now we're at 2015, and one of the first scholars that I took in is going to get a D1 scholarship to University of Hawaii next year. This girl came from the poorest of towns, and her parents, you know, really didn't have much to afford her, and now she is going to get a U.S. education, which is, you know, at the end of the day, that's what we're after, and that's what will be our success story. So that's my story. That's what I've done, you know, my little contribution to Philippine tennis. And I'm no longer involved with the academy because after my daughter went to college, I kind of pulled back a little bit because I want to follow her around. So that's my story.
Okay. All right, before we get into John, we're going to start next to John. John Morella, I want to hear a little bit about, why don't you tell us a little bit about you?
Okay. First of all, I want to thank you guys for inviting me.
I'm still kind of
shocked that this is actually being heard around the world. I mean, that's pretty amazing. But
technology today.
Yeah, that's right.
But,
okay. I guess what I could do is I guess I can start telling you about kind of how I grew up. My parents are they weren't well off at all. And, you know, as far as sports, I didn't even pick up a tennis racket until I was 15. Never even touched one. But I was supposed to be a baseball player, so I was a pitcher. Then I played shortstop. Then I played the other position. Went from baseball to football to soccer, bowling, and then I picked up tennis, and then I picked up golf. And the two sports that I really, really, really enjoyed was I enjoyed golf even more than tennis, but because it's really expensive, I kind of just stuck with tennis. I got the bug when I was in high school. I played number 9 for my team my sophomore year, and I caught the bug then, and I did nothing but play tennis for a full year, and the next year I switched schools, but I played so much that I made it to number 1 on the team. After high school, I joined the Army. I was in the Army for 4 years active, 3 years reserve. I went to college, and in that time, I was still playing tennis, but I was fortunate to hook up with a guy that ran the Nike tennis camps. And I became really good friends with him and worked at his camp for, I want to say, over 10 years. And I really, really, really studied the game. So I take what I've learned from him and then my experience in playing and trying to make it, and that's what I do when I teach. So, as far as me trying to get a scholarship.
What area are you in?
I'm in South Florida now. I'm in Delray, South Florida.
Are you with an academy, or are you independent, or are you with a rec department, or how would someone find you if someone wanted to? Do you deal with younger kids, older kids?
Well, after I graduated college, I ended up getting a job. I went back to teaching again. And, you know, because I worked full time, I really, you know, couldn't take on a lot of kids. So I took on a couple kids. You know, of course, they end up getting really good after, you know, 6 months, a couple years, they started getting really good. And then their name gets out. They say, "Who's his coach?" "Oh, it's John." You know, and then I start getting more kids. And so, interestingly enough, a little girl came to my court one day and said, "Hi, would you teach me how to play tennis?" And I was like, "Okay." And I talked. Let me talk to your mom. So we talked, and I started working with her for about 3 months, and she started getting really good. Next thing you know, which I've only really taught guys tennis. Now I had like 6 girls that I was teaching, and then I think I had a total of about 15 girls I was working with on top of two or three boys while I was working full time. And I mean, it's a commitment, it's a sacrifice. You know, I told them if they may want to make a commitment and learn the game that I'm going to teach them, then I'm going to make a commitment. I'm going to do whatever I can to make sure that I can work with you guys. So,
okay.
Lo and behold, I ended up losing my job at where I was working at, and I tried to do tennis full time. So I, you know, got hooked up with some courts, and then just during the summer, you know, it was just tough because I'm used to making this much money to support my family, and all of a sudden, you know, the summer goes, kids are at camp, kids are going on vacation. You know, sometimes the parents don't fall through, you know, and then I went through, you know, over $10,000 of savings to, you know, pay the bills. And I was like, look, I just got to get a job again. So I moved down to South Florida and now I still teach, but I pretty much just work with a couple kids now.
Right.
But I'm very much, you know, still in the game and I'm still, you know, I still go to tournaments and I, you know, I still, you know, my weekend is pretty much consumed with tennis now.
And,
but,
well, we're glad to have you come on the show and share some time with us and share your experience. You know, one of the things that Susan and I once again are, you know, is some of the tennis minds, some of the tennis, like I said, some of the tennis enthusiasts, some of the young coaches, our coaches. I think, you know, the platform to be able to get out here and just to expose yourself, you know, tell, you know, have people tell, you know, your story and go from there. Well, Susan, anything you want to add? Any questions, Susan?
Yeah, I was just curious. What was your job in the Army? I was just kind of curious because not everybody, I used to be at one time back in, I think it was 90, oh, it was before I got pregnant, so it was 92. I was the All-Army coach. So you were out by then or were you still in?
Oh,
because
shoot.
I was out in 89.
Oh, yeah, you didn't. Yeah, Wes was like, I didn't know about
shoot.
That.
Oh, well. My God. Oh, my
See,
God.
I would have known
mean,
if there was a fire
Army,
and I didn't get
oh,
them,
my
then I'm
Lord.
Be mad because I lost
oh,
to the Air Force.
Oh, God. I can see Susan
yeah.
now blowing a whistle. You know, ask someone else, why don't we blow whistles in tennis? I mean, is it because we can't be loud? I mean, I actually did that one day. I came out to the tennis court. I was, my kid was running. I should have got sly when I blow the whistle. Everybody turned around and gave me the nastiest look. I can see you now, Susan, and wearing those big old Army hats. You know, you got the sun out there. I can see you now, girl. I can see you now. I can see it. But good, I can see
one
it.
Of the highlights
so,
was making a one-star general do push-ups. I will say that. But where were you at? Because if I would have known that there was a player and I didn't get him, I'm going to be mad at myself. So.
Are you asking where I was stationed at?
Yeah, where are you stationed at? You were in the 92, weren't you?
I was from 86 to 89, active at Fort Hood, Texas.
Oh, okay. But you were in the reserves after that?
And I was in the reserves after that in Florida.
Oh, man. You see, I could have had another player. See,
actually,
I hated that
Tennessee,
I lost the Air Force. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was teaching and coaching up at Fort Eustis at the transportation.
Okay.
Yeah, now
it's going with Langley. Good. Anything else? Anything anymore? Because of question.
No, I just find it interesting hearing people's stories and their backgrounds and where they came from and why they do what they do. It's fascinating. It helps you understand how the stroke how coaching has evolved in this country. I think it's fascinating.
That's good.
Yeah.
I'm interested in hearing Coach Juan talk about his perspective of I'm getting old. I'm interested in hearing about why Islands the Islands. I mean, Susan, when I think about tennis. The islands. I want to know why Bahamas, Jamaica, all of these different islands. I'm so interested. Coach and I were having a conversation, and he talked about something. And I told him I'd love for him to elaborate a little bit on it on the show, his opinion. But I was wondering why islands like the Philippines and all these different islands really don't why don't they have pros? Why don't they have pros? Why are the pros coming from Sweden? I mean, in continents that it's like Hawaii. Why aren't warm continents? I mean, I know Nadal's from a warm continent, but you know, if you look at Mary and all these, why aren't these islands producing pros? Coach?
Well, Wes, that's a great question. And I'll speak for the Philippines since I lived there for the last 12, 13 years. I can tell you that it comes down not to the lack of talent, mind you. And I'm sure the other islands have talent too that could be developed. But it comes down to two factors, coaching level and travel. You know, what I found in the Philippines was they have some great coaches. They have some great, energetic, young, you know, one who wants to learn coaches, but they just didn't get the chance to learn how to teach the kids properly from developmental all the way up to high performance. That's a key factor. I'll give you an example. We took a young boy, age 11, very talented, hits the ball great, number one in his age group. But when we took him to Southern California, he couldn't get past quarters in the level four, which is not very high in Southern California. Well, he did a few things wrong, you know. Footwork was really bad on his ground strokes. You know, he was not stable, didn't have balance on the finish. Forehand was really bad, collapsed the elbow. So we fixed all of that. But the boy had great talent. Well, 2012, he got to the final of the Orange Bowl after we fixed him. So the talent is there. It's not like it's not there. So coaching expertise is one, and tournament travel is the other. I mean, you can only play in your own country, and you can only get so good. To improve further, you have to go out of your own country to play, and that takes money.
Do they have a federation in the Philippines? Do they have a federation?
Yes, it's called FILTA, Philippine Tennis Association, and they don't really support.
How are they with the Rogue? How are they with Rogue or Quick Start? Do you guys implement that program? And do they implement that program?
Actually, when we started PTA, Philippine Tennis Association, we met with FILTA because they wanted us to oversee their development, their youth development, and we gave them a blueprint of how to incrementally. Identify talent ID, identify the good players or players with talent, and how to train them, you know, to be competitive but in a friendly, fun way, and how to improve their games over time, over the years. So we did all that with them. And to my knowledge, we met, they love what we have to say, and never implemented it. So, there's money in there for the federation. I just don't know where the money goes, to be real honest with you. And I hope no one takes offense to that. But that's my.
I understand. Now, do they have any pro tournaments? Any pro? Do they have any ITFs? I mean, they're pro. A lot of pros semi. I call it semi pro. I just basketball level. Do they have any tour level tournaments? Pro level tournaments?
Well, they have one junior ITF grade. Actually, two junior ITF grade four, one junior ITF grade one. They used to have two women's 10,000s, and the gentleman who was funding that for many, many years took the money away and then put that money to develop juniors in our academy. So that's gone. And after that, there's really nothing for the players of the kids. I mean, they have many, many tournaments. I look at the Federation tournament calendar. They probably got 40, 50 tournaments. But there's no clear-cut ranking system, point system.
It seems funny. I meet a lot of players from islands, and some of them seem to have some of the same stories, that it seems more that tennis is not blooming in their country. It's more political than it actually is tennis. I mean, I don't live in the country, so I can't say I'm not governing anyone's country. So I can't. What West Florida Coach West says is nothing as minuscule. But from the stories that I hear, it just seems that it's like the government believes that it's a rich sport, and if you're going to play it, you better be rich, watch, so we can make money off it. I don't know how to perceive it, I mean, but I just hear a lot of stories from smaller countries, smaller island countries, and Caribbean countries, different countries, that they all struggle with the same thing of the government, of the, whether or not it's taxes coming in when you're trying to bring a product in. You've got to pay 17% here, then this percent here. You know, you're bringing in a $7 string. Before the string even gets to you, I mean, maybe a $3 string, before it gets to you, you're paying $16 for a $3 piece of string for all it has to do to come through. I mean, some of these things that I feel that the government, and I just see that the government or the Federation or whatever it is, it's the reason why. It's not kids. It's the reason why tennis doesn't come up in these countries. And, you know, it's a shame. It's a shame that a government would even get involved in something that can do so much for kids. I mean, forget the pro aspect of it, but in every society, every place, there's kids that are overweight. There's kids that can use to run. Running is healthy. Running is good. Competing is good. And so much of our kids, our downfall of our kids are sometimes I tend to think it's from our society where, you know, where we don't put emphasis on sports. I meet so many parents that, you know, they sports is not really important. Their academics are important. Please don't get me wrong, academics is not important. But if your son can get a full scholarship to any college they want and they get B's, that's not that bad. I mean, why? Because when they get to college, it starts all over anyway. If I'm not telling somebody not to get all A's, and I'm not telling nobody the standards of the way they have their kids live, but everybody can't be a blue chipper or a five-star or a three-star or and that NBA students too. But if their grades, if they got the core foundation of school and their grades are 3.1, 3.2, 3.3, but they're also in the running for getting a scholarship, I think that's very good. I think that's extremely good. You know, I mean, and I hear a lot of parents that they give that attitude to their kids, and now that rubs off on their kids because their kids, and don't get me wrong, their kids because it's academic. When I tell people, if you depending upon your high school performance or your high school grades to get you a job, you're not making no money. You know, it's all about where you're going to school, college. If your kid can get into college, you know, that's what's important. I mean, that's what's important. Well, we're gonna wrap up. I just want Susan and I. We want to thank you two for coming on and sharing some of your experiences and some tennis with us. It's something that Susan and I are where we believe in a lot. We believe that we meet so many different people. Or I've met so many different people, and Susan knows. Everybody knows Susan. Everybody knows Susan. Everybody knows Susan. We meet so many people, and sometimes it's exactly what Susan said. Sometimes it's not how many kids you coach. It's not the big academies. No, it's the simplest. It's the simplest to hear the story, to be proud of what you do, to get yourself out there, to be proud of what you do, and to share some of your story with us, because, you know, we all look at ourselves as all little family, and we all love tennis, and that's the key. And, you know, sometimes collaboration, sometimes the smallest you could do something that I don't do, that, you know, we've got to learn to communicate. Well, I want to thank both of you for coming on tonight and joining us tonight. I hope you guys had a good time. I know Susan and I, we wasn't really our fun. We didn't really cut up as much today as we usually do. But I thought it was a well. You guys did well and showed us your story, and I appreciate it. And Susan, you know, anything you want to say to the coach before we let him go?
Hey, thank you very much for your time. It's fascinating hearing your stories and. Great stuff. Thank you for coming on. Appreciate you taking the time out of your evening to join us. Appreciate it.
Well, you know, Wes, I just want to say I want to thank you for doing what you do, and Susan also. It's, you know, really great to see you guys so dedicated, so focused to what we all try to do. So, yeah, thanks.
I'll second that. So thanks a lot for having us.
All right. Thank you guys a lot. Well, Susan, what do you have in store for us tomorrow? You know, I've done the talking. For Susan, I'm taking a day off. I want to know, what is this joy makes? I mean, I'm just doing this stuff. Is the last name the last name of what the last name, what I think the last name is? Is the last name the last name? You know, Macy. That's a famous name in tennis. You know, that's the kind of
name.
Is that a Macy?
Well, actually, no. She's got an event going on tomorrow that's come up. So, she's had something come up. She did promise me she would be on.
We got to reschedule. We got to reschedule. We got to reschedule Joy.
Yeah, we're gonna reschedule Joy. But Yvonne is on the men's. She's playing like a rock star in this tournament. She had an early morning match and somehow managed to pull it out in three, and that just rocked the house. So she's going to be on tomorrow night. So just be ready to have it West Coast style.
Hey, well, I'm going to sit back. I'm going to enjoy. I've been doing a lot of research, and you know, the first thing when I put in her name, you know, put in the name, Google, she comes up like she's a beast. You know, come up like, you know, I see her playing. You know, then you know this ITF senior thing. You know, she ITS. You know, I'm sitting here like, look at this. You know, ITS. Look at Susan hanging out. Next thing you know, Susan going, I started to put in Susan's name, but I got scared. I'm not going to lie, Susan. I didn't want to put in your name. Why? Because if it came up and it says, I got scared. Susan, listen, pressure, Susan. Pressure can kill it. I'm 6'5".
Oh, she'd
pressure.
She'd kick my butt. There's no doubt about it. She'd kick my butt. She's still very active playing. She's plays singles and doubles out there on that circuit. She's, you know, she runs a highly successful academy. At the Everett Academy. I mean, she's done it all.
I see it. You know, it's not a shame to play that game. You know, I see she listen. You know, she playing the seniors. You know, she taking names and kicking butt. My kids asked me, Daddy, you gonna play the seniors? I said, I ain't no senior thing. And they actually said, Dad, you're going to play the old people thing. I said, what do you mean? You know, the old people, you know why y'all take, because they only think that old people take breaks. You know, my daughter's 7, 6, and 7, 7 and 9. So, you know, they, don't get me wrong, they play, but they I don't let them see everything. So they only think that, I got to my daughter's train that, you know, when they walk around, you know, ain't no breaks, you know. So they only think old people sit down on changeovers. So she's asking me, are you going to play that old people style where y'all sit down and y'all have your drinks and y'all put the towels over your face and you wash your face? You going to play the old people? And I said, old people can play, you know, and it's funny. A kid came to me the other day, talked that I had to beat up on him. You know, that's why I tell people every day, one of the biggest development tools for young kids and young juniors, and it does depend upon the age and the level, are playing against adults. You know, one of the biggest things, you know, I play some kids, Susan, they could out-pound me. I'm a big pounder, hitter. They could out-hit me, and they don't understand why when I play you, it's no pound, pound, pound. You beat us. You slice me here. You dink me there. You this, you that. God, you just annoying. You get to me. You irk me. I'm like, yes. You know, listen, I'm not no fool. What am I out there? Look, I'm 50 years old. I'm not trying to play some 16-year-old kid. They're going to embarrass me. You know, and it's funny. You know, well, it's been a great show. I thought it was pretty good. I thought it was a good show, and it was so good, excuse me, to hear your stories and to hear from the coaches. But then, you know, I'm sorry to bring it on you or to shock it on you, but I really wanted to touch some of those issues, because I really think that some of the success that tennis, and not just USTA tennis, not just USTA or USA tennis, but tennis in all, has to do with our gender, you know, how we approach each other, how we communicate with each other, you know, because honestly, Susan, this is something I truly believe in, and I'm a parent, I'm a father, and I'm a coach, but I don't believe that I strongly believe that a female would be better off coaching a female than a male. I mean, there may be lots of scenarios, a lot of different instances where that may be down, but in the bare essence of it, if we say that the games are too different and a man can never play a female game, how can I teach that female better than a female who plays that male game? And I find it hard to believe that males that just 100% believe that it doesn't matter, because it does. The same way, Susan, I'm not going to lie, I think it's very hard for a woman to coach a top man because the game is so different. Is it impossible? Oh, no. No, it's not impossible, but there is a difference. You know, there's a difference in it, and one of the reasons, and there's a difference, and I, that's something that I want to look at, and I want to address, and I want to look at, and I think the reason that in the pros and all those, on all those levels, that it's possible for Maresmo to do all these things now, because at their level, it doesn't necessarily, tennis is not what we think it is, the X's and the O's or the strength. It's about the planning. It's about the mental mind of the player. It's about the strategy. Why? Because the player is already strong. The player is already a man. So now to play that game, it takes a mind, and Maresmo and a female has that mind. I mean, she has that mind, and it doesn't matter at that level. You know, it just really doesn't matter at that throw. It really doesn't matter, because the game is a mental game, you know?
Yes. It is truly a mental game. Once beyond a certain level, it's all in your head. Yeah.
Yes, you know, and it's important. And we men, and I don't mean to pick, I'm not just saying men, but I have to admit, because I'm a man, and because it is still a man, and more men, we tend to not, we have to, when we're really looking at building an athlete, we have to be honest and true. Is the game about, is the game is mental, and we need to develop more mental drills, more mental situations, more mental things for our young players to do. And you can't do that if you don't have competition. Competition creates a mental mind. I mean, it's about the mind, and you can't mentally do something without a consequence. You know, I'm not telling, and I think that's something that we as Americans, but we as in general, as when we start looking at younger kids, I hear people say, you know, it's too young to compete, it's too young to this, it's too young that. It's built in our nature to compete. It's built in our nature to do these things, and it's built in our nature to compete. I mean, take a girl that's 14 years old, take that boy that's 14 years old, Susan, I would bet 10 out of 13 times that girl wins. Why? Because at that age, she's more mature than he is. And secondly, at that age, she wants to compete more than she does. She actually wants to win more than he does. She does.
Yeah. Girls, you know, are far more competitive than people give credit for. That's for sure.
That's right. And I hear people, you know, I mean, and everybody has a thing, but female tennis is born. No, female tennis is tennis. And, you know, if you look at these players and you really look at their skill level and their skills, they all produce these skills. And, you know, we have to get off of the idea that strength and everything. We have to, as tennis coaches, start to really, I look at our American players, and I mean, I'm American, so I'm a little bit biased, but I look at players in general, how the mental games fall down. I mean, I watched Donald Young play, I watched Donald Young play last week. Guys, I mean, honestly, I love Donald Young to death, think he's great, but his opponent was better than him. But the opponent played like he didn't care about winning, or I don't understand that mental breakdown that these players have. And to me, that has to do with coaching. That has to do with something that we as a coaching fam is doing, that are not giving our kids that mental discipline, that mental desire to compete. I mean, look at Query. Look at all of our American players. What is the biggest factor we have to sum it up? Is closing, or the ability to compete. They're too willing to fold, too willing to do something to get them out of the moment, get them out of what the most important thing about tennis is, competing. And I hate to say it, but I don't see many women matches. I mean, I'm sure people are going to show me so many that they do, but I don't see many women matches taking. You know, when I think about tanking, I don't think about women matches. I'm just being lying. I think about men matches tanking. I just don't think about women matches tanking. And I think that there's something to that. And we've got to look into that is putting it together. Maybe it's men and women together, collaborating together and putting it together, making both minds together as one to make us a great player, because, you know, somebody's going to be better than Federer, somebody's going to be better than Nadal. So those bars are set high. So we as coaches have to develop that high level. Well, Susan, it's about time for us to get out of here. It's been a great show, and I've worked with Susan tonight. I'm going to tell you now, Susan, tomorrow I'm going to be sitting back here. I'm going to have me a nice coffee, and I'm going to listen. I am only introducing and saying my name. I am going to listen. If I feel as though I can comment, I will, because I am not going to let two ladies beat up on me. I am just not going to let it happen. I'm just going to sit back here and absorb some of the knowledge that you ladies, that she's going to bring to us tomorrow. And Susan, I know the questions, and I know the show that you've got set up for us tomorrow is going to be fantastic. And I want everybody also to know that Susan is going to be doing sometimes specials where it's just going to be Susan. She's going to be highlighting different things and whatnot. It's wrong, but it's going to be Susan, and it's going to be special shows. And I want everybody to look for that. It's just going to be a woman show. Susan's going to be focusing really on the female coach, getting that female voice out there. Even though I know it's out there now, getting it out there more, letting that female, letting it be heard, so we can become better tennis players and better tennis coaches. Well, Susan, I want to wrap it up, and I want to thank you again for being the co-host that you are, and I want to tell everybody that tomorrow's night show is a do not miss. The coach's credentials are out of this world. The coach's personality is out of this world, and it should be a great treat. So, Susan, I'm going to let you do what you do. Take us home, and I'm going to say, me, Coach Wes Fuller, good night. Susan, you got it. Take us home.
All right, another great show. Looking forward to tomorrow. You know, definitely do not miss this. What a treat, and especially seeing everything I've seen this week. It's been a joy. So, Wes, till tomorrow, have a great evening. Hope you get some dry weather there. Hope we get some dry weather here. Be ready to hit the courts and have a great show tomorrow night.
All right, good night.
Good night.